You're listening to Satellite Sisters.
What's a satellite sister?
The person you call when the best thing in your life happens or the worst.
The person that gets you up, gets you going, and gets you through.
And every once in a while, changes your mind.
This podcast is part pep talk, part weekly check-in.
Like grabbing coffee with a friend.
Thanks for being here. Welcome to the Satellite Sisterhood.
You're listening to Satellite Sisters. I'm Leanne Dolan. I'm a writer and producer. I live in Pasadena, California. I have two college-aged kids, a husband, a dog, and I'm here with my sister Julie Dolan today.
Hi, Leanne. Yes, it's me, Julie Dolan. I live in Dallas, Texas. I'm a podcaster, an urban nana. I now have five grandchildren. Amazing. Okay, and I've lived and worked all over the world, and I'm happy to be here with you.
You may notice a voice missing today. Liz has a speaking gig in Portland, Oregon, so she is not with us. But with us in spirit? I don't know. Can we say that? Sure, we can say that.
Yes, yes. We're going to do a little tribute to her. But I think, Leanne, let's start with a moment of remembrance for 9/11. We are doing this podcast on 9/11, 2018, but our thoughts certainly are with the victims and the families, with the first responders then and now, many of those first responders, Leanne, are dealing with long-term health problems from their exposure to the World Trade Center site, to the military families who have sacrificed so much and have shouldered the burden of keeping us safe as they fight on in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria. So we think of them all today, and we will not forget. And from our family to your family, thank you so much.
Very nice, Joel. You know, I'm always reminded, too, of our original production team at WNYC, because it was a Tuesday morning like this on September 11th. We were on a production call. Our offices are right down by the Trade Center. Liz was stuck in the subway. Our producer was stuck in a ferry. Another producer was trying to get over from Brooklyn. You know, we dialed in at 10 a.m. Eastern time, and the towers fell right when we were on the call. And I remember our production staff that was there running out of the building because they were so close. So I always think of our team at WNYC today, too. They did some fantastic work after 9/11. So thinking of them today, too. All right.
Good point. 9/11, this day, September 11th, also happens to be the birthday of our sister Liz. And so a big happy birthday to you, Sister Liz. And, you know, Leanne, I was thinking about Liz. I don't know that I've ever said this out loud, but she's an excellent sister. Do you know that? I mean, she really crushes it as a sister. When
it's
you
true.
Think of a sister, you know, Liz is pretty much everything you want in a sister. She's smart. She's funny. She's always up for an adventure. Lots of times she instigates the adventures. She's an excellent confidant. She's generous beyond belief. She's kind. She has just totally nailed the sister thing, don't you think?
I haven't really thought about it. And just with a touch of fear, too. I would say, like, we're all slightly scared of her. So when she, you know, when she asks us to do something, we just get right on it. So it is a complete package, Julie. I never really thought about that. Also, Liz has a quality where she just doesn't care that much what other people think. And I
And you admire that. So many traits that she has that are admirable.
Right.
So.
In the sense that, like, she doesn't trade in gossip or fussiness, or she doesn't overthink a lot of relationship things in a very healthy, positive way. So it is her birthday today. So many nice sea turtles posted on our Facebook group, which is really cute to see. I'm sure Liz appreciated that. So she's speaking to a group of women in Portland, Oregon, and then celebrating her birthday with friends there. So that is excellent. All right, Julie, one more promotion too for Liz, Safe for Work. Her episode this week is a great show, Safe for Work,
where Liz gives advice, career advice. But it's always in the spirit of having your best career, being your best self at work. And I just have to say, she sent me a text that apparently she quoted me because I had provided her with some excellent advice about being a trailing spouse. For many years, I was a trailing spouse and lived abroad, as my husband progressed in his career. And apparently Liz quoted me on Safe for Work. I have not listened to the podcast yet, but she said I'm good. It's good advice, Leanne.
All right. Excellent. Let's just preview what we're going to do today. It's me and Julie, but we still have a full show, you know, all the requisite topics we're going to talk about. We are going to talk about the U.S. Open women's final. We're big tennis fans, a big Serena Williams fans, and no one saw that coming. Also, we mentioned on our Facebook group, we will be talking about, do you track your kids? You responded to our question and our query. So we have some thoughts about using the apps available to track your teenagers in particular. Another media titan goes down thanks to his terrible behavior. We're going to talk a little bit.
It's perplexing, Leon. I mean, it's disturbing. And it's perplexing. And we're going to talk about that. I also am going to tell you, Leanne, that you're our only hope as the youngest sister to try to retire early. This is one of my Tuesday trends, okay? You're actually too old to qualify to retire early. But among the sisters, you're our only hope. So you have to get on fire, Leanne. That's what it's called. And I'm going to explain it when we talk about Tuesday trends.
All right. Later on in the show, we're going to announce our new Satellite Sisters book club pick. It's a very moving memoir. I think will resonate with people in this community. So stay tuned for that. And then we have a couple of other entertaining sisters recommendations. But first, Julie, just a shout out. I'd like to own just a tiny part of the success of the word hangry. All right. Remember,
right. The first time I ever heard that term was right here at Satellite Sisters.
Right. Yeah. It has now officially been placed into the Merriam-Webster dictionary, along with 839 other words. But hangry, a combination of hungry and angry, is now officially a word. And many people credit Sheila Dolan, our sister Sheila Dolan, with coining the word. She did not coin it, but the second we saw it, we knew it applied to Sheila. Because
Exactly. She embodied hangriness.
Hangry.
I mean, you just have to trust us. Like when you're with Sheila and she hasn't had enough food and her blood sugar dips, things happen. Okay. She becomes some other person.
Yeah. So technically, I mean, she can be fine at 6:10 and then by 6:13, she's hangry. She's screaming at the waitresses. Things have completely deteriorated. So even though Sheila did not coin the word hangry, I feel like she popularized it on our radio show. And now Merriam-Webster has honored her by putting hangry in the dictionary. So congratulations, hangry.
Okay. That's a fine word. That's a fine word. Leanne, I have to say this, I'm still recovering from this weekend. You know, I'm a big tennis fan. You're a tennis fan. I attempt to play tennis. I love all things tennis. So I don't think there was any, I was one of those super excited people. I was very excited for Saturday for the Women's U.S. Open Finals, you know, and I really thought it was going to be a great afternoon. I look forward to watching Serena win the match and get another Grand Slam title.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about it last week. My admiration for her as a player, as a sports icon, has grown so much this year as she has opened up about her pregnancy, childbirth, and being a mother. I was looking forward to the big win in the big 2-2. But that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Did you see the match, Leanne?
No, I did not see it. I was at a wedding. So I was at a wedding all day Saturday. So I didn't see it live. I got a text from you that just says, crying for both Serena and Naomi, followed by Liz, me too, sad. And I was like, uh-oh, what happened? But I was actually in the middle of a wedding, so I didn't want to have to Google it. But then I came back and saw all the stories. So, Julie, what did happen in the moment? Because I didn't even want to go watch it afterwards, because I already had all these preconceived notions. So as it was unfolding, what were you thinking?
Well, the first thing you should know, and I want to stipulate this, before we talk, is, you know, that I agree with Serena that there is, you know, probably widespread, you know, sexism in the sport. There are things to fight for equality. Okay. But I want to talk about the match and what happened on Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay. And first of all, it was a match, Leanne. Young Naomi Osaka, she's 20 years old. She's the first Japanese player to make a U.S. Open final. Okay, she's half Haitian, half Japanese. She brought her A game, Leanne.
She was playing great all week. great.
She was beating Serena. She had a bigger serve, bigger returns, and Serena was not playing her best. That's not for me. That's what the commentators were saying. She was only getting 36% of her first serve in. Okay, which in tennis terms is really low.
Right.
Because that is what you want to do. You want to get that big first serve in. You want to score the points. So Naomi was crushing it. She had just great shots. And she was cool as a cucumber. She really wasn't showing emotion. And Serena was, you know, again, very flat-footed, very back-footed with a lot of her shots. Mm-hmm. She was missing her serve, double-faulting a lot. She lost the first set 6-2. At the start of the second set, so it didn't go well. It really didn't go well for Serena in that first set. At the beginning of the second set, the umpire called Serena's coach for coaching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her coach, Patrick, was sitting in the box, and there you can watch the, I'm sure you've seen the video replay. He used his hands. He made a large hand gesture to sort of telling Serena, you got to go to the net. You got to go to the net.
Mm-hmm.
The coach, this was well within the umpire's right to call this coaching. The coach later admit, yes, he was coaching. It's an unusual call. Okay. It was an unusual call in a final, but it's not was not that unusual for this particular umpire, who had a long reputation as being very strict, rule oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at this point that Serena, I think, made a big, this is after really, after a sleepless night on Saturday, Sunday, I'm still obsessed by it. This is where I think Serena really made a choice. No one was accusing Serena of cheating. They were just saying, your coach was coaching. You got to tell him to stop it. Okay.
Right. The players are held responsible for that. They lose the point.
Exactly.
Yeah. According to the rules. Right.
The players are held responsible. And she could have easily have told her box to cool it. She could have said, stop it. She could have told her box, everyone in her box, to leave. She had a lot of options to do that. She didn't do that.
Yeah.
She decided it was about her. She decided that it was, you know, that the umpire was accusing her of cheating, and that she had never cheated in her life, and that I believe, and that she, you know, that this, you know, this was a personal attack on her.
Yeah.
And that's not what the umpire said. Many people believe the umpire should not have made that call, that perhaps he should have given her a warning, like just said, hey, you better tell your box to stop coaching, you know, just like verbally. But there's no guarantee that even if the umpire had done that, had given her just a verbal warning, that she wouldn't have had the same reaction. But I think at that moment, she decided that she was going to just disrupt the whole match. She wanted to change the tenor of the match. They move on in the second set, Leon. She lost her serve at 3-1. And that's when she broke her racket. She took her racket, she threw it down and demolished it. Okay.
Right.
Because out of frustration, this happens to tennis players,
right.
But given that she had already had a code violation, it was an automatic, the umpire had no choice but to assess her 1 point.
Yeah.
And that's when she, you know, when Serena just would not move on from this. She escalated it on every changeover. She was pointing at the umpire. She was really upset, and she would not or could not let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And then she called the umpire a thief. Now, people are making a lot out of, well, she didn't really use any profanity. I've heard, you know, other players, you know, sort of swear up and down. But she did impugn the character of the umpire. And again, the umpire, when you do that, the umpire doesn't have much choice but to assess a game, because that's the third penalty, which is an extremely rare penalty.
Right. I mean, I was going to say, he actually does have a choice. They always have a choice. I mean, in every sport, the umpire makes an active choice. I mean, what you don't want in any sport, in any final, is for the referee to decide the winner.
Exactly.
You know, you see that in basketball, in the NBA finals, the last 10 minutes of the game, the umpire, you know, the ref just lets him play. You see it in the World Cup, where things may be, you know, very tense. They don't give PKs you know, easily in the first few minutes or the last few minutes of a title game, because again, you don't want the referee to, you don't want the referee to decide the match. So feels
but
like
I think she made a choice to like burn the place down.
Well,
it was her choice.
She's a passionate player. She's done that before. You know, that's always been the critique of Serena Williams, is that she is really her own worst opponent. Like in years when no one could even touch her on the tour, the matches she lost, the finals she lost, were usually when she lost it. So, so you know, the combination of being outplayed and then this, she's a passionate
player. But
see,
that's what I mean. I think she this is to me, okay, that, so I was crying for Serena. I was really screaming at my TV set saying, don't do it, Serena. Don't do it. I was so upset. But she was changing the momentum of the match by this disruption. Mm-hmm. Her disruption was, you know, it was an attempt to get into change the direction and the momentum, because all of the momentum was with Naomi. And I think that is, you know, she robbed Naomi of the joy and most importantly, the honor of winning her first Grand Slam title. As you know, by the time they got to the awards ceremony, you know, Serena made a beautiful comment up there. She said, no more booing. But poor Naomi was actually apologized for winning the Grand Slam, for winning the U.S. Open. So I have to put a lot of that responsibility on Serena. Mary Carrillo, longtime excellent tennis commentator, she said, you know, Serena Williams is the greatest player of all times, but she also can be a terrible bully. And I think that's what she was on Saturday. She was really trying to bully this umpire.
I think it's a double whammy in tennis, too, because it has the history of being a genteel sport. So,
right.
Like, and they're out there all by themselves. Everyone is staring at them. Again, every other sport, people are screaming at the refs and the umps all the time. If you're in a team sport, you get an opportunity to sound off on the refs when they make a call. I mean, and you don't get penalized for that unless it's really bad. You know, whereas tennis, you cringe when you see players stick up for themselves for a bad call or this or that. But on the other hand, we applaud them for being passionate, and they can't necessarily always turn that off. And they may be their own worst enemy.
No, so. I agree with that, Leanne. But, you know, as an amateur player and certainly as a professional player, you're going to run into bad calls.
Right.
And you have to decide whether you're going to let it into the match or not. You know, and she made that choice. That's what I, you know, she made that choice there. So so it's just unfortunate. I'm still trying to figure out why, you know, was it just because she was losing the match and she wanted to change the momentum? Was it, as she says, she was fighting for women's rights, was it all of those things at the same time?
Well, I think there was a little bit of that. It seems like the first call was a harsh call. Like the umpire had his right to just give her a warning. And that, I think, would have been a very different situation. Once you start.
It was, in a sense, a warning. And it was the only reason it all got escalated is because she broke the racket.
Yeah.
I mean, that's if she hadn't broken her racket, then, as it turns out, at the U.S. Open 2018, 86 code violations were assessed to men. 22 code violations were assessed to women.
Oh, some facts. On the table.
I brought some facts, Lee, and I've gone deep on this topic. So
I know. You have truly been truly upset and truly up all night trying to figure out what this is. So what really happened?
So I still don't know, because obviously, you know, she is still the greatest player of all times.
Yeah.
Maybe this was not her greatest day. And I just... my heart is still broken for Naomi that she can never get back that moment. Cause she played brilliantly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, she'll never have that freedom again either to play like that with no weight on her shoulders. So that is too bad. That is too bad. Well, it's interesting to me. It'll be interesting to see what shakes out of this. I mean, a lot of other things have shaken out, but you see people like Martina Navratilova and Billie Jean King speaking out. And maybe there's going to be a reassessment of just the coaching in general. Because I would say generationally, OK, it's Satellite Sister Sports. But, you know, I don't remember players like McEnroe and Navratilova looking in the coach's box. I don't even remember coaches being there. So now it's just absolutely.
I mean, and Serena says she never relies on her coach during the match.
I believe that too. Yeah. Like come to net. Well, duh. Like Serena Williams doesn't know that. I mean, she knows how to win. So I think it's just that in general, they look at their box all the time now. And that's different than it used to be. You know,
I
think they have to accommodate for sort of the team. Now there's entire teams in boxes and there's this person and that person. And that's very different than it used to be. It used to be just like John McEnroe's parents, you know. I mean, remember, Pete Sampras's parents didn't come to a single match. They never came. They couldn't stand to watch
him in person. Poor Naomi Osaka's father can't watch her matches.
Yeah.
He was just out walking around. That would be me.
I would believe that. So anyway, well, Julie, you did an excellent analysis. Yeah, I was.
Okay.
We were all psyched to watch it, but you guys spoiled it for us by texting me in the wedding. And then when the controversy happened, I'm like, yeah, I really think
watch the men's finals. I just all the emotion was sucked out, Liam. So.
All right. Well, excellent analysis. I know you really worked hard on that. You've really been thinking about it. So thank you for that. Okay, coming up, we're going to talk about tracking your kids. But first, we want to thank a couple of sponsors here at Satellite Sisters. All right, we're back. Jewel, we want to talk about tracking your kids.
Yes. Okay. Sign me up, Liam.
I know.
If my kids were teenagers, I'd be the front of the line for this.
I know.
I think.
Well, we were tipped off by a story in the New York Times, and it was in the parenting section about, like, tracking your kids. And now, Julie, there are so many more tools now than when you...
General surveillance, like just following them in a car. They have something better than that. Hiding in the bushes. You can't do that now.
You can still do that.
Rummaging through their room. You can't do that. Listening in on their phone calls when the phone is in the kitchen on the wall. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So those are all tools that you used. Not very successfully, I might add.
No, not at all.
Your sons managed to evade you at all times. But, so this article caught my eye because it was pretty straightforward about, like, hey, it wasn't judgy is what I would say. Like, hey, if you want to track your kids, and there are many reasons why you might want to, here's some tools and maybe here are some parameters for doing it. But according to research in this New York Times article, the Pew Research Poll, 16% of parents track their 13 to 17 year olds. I actually thought that number was low.
I think that not everyone's admitting to doing it.
Yes.
Possibly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or, the other thing is we take for granted that everyone has a smartphone, and not everyone has a smartphone. So if you don't have a smartphone or your kids don't have a smartphone, then you wouldn't really be able to use all the tools that are now available to you. But the New York Times talked to psychologists and they said, listen, your kids, knowing that you're tracking them, it keeps the leash on a little bit longer. Maybe they get the feeling that they can't do anything without turning to you or talking to you or consulting you, and that may hurt them in the long run. But there are plenty of reasons why you might want to keep an eye on them. They mentioned health reasons, for instance, something. They said, listen, maybe it's just high school. And then when they go off to college, you let them go and you let them do their thing. So I thought it was pretty reasonable. Like, it actually got me thinking because I did not track my sons.
Did some of your friends track their sons?
Yes.
Or friends of your sons?
Yes.
So that...
Yeah.
You they'd provide you with that information.
Yeah.
I mean, really only need one in this cell to track when you think about it, Lan.
That's a good point.
I'm kidding.
But I learned from the Satellite Sisterhood that there are a lot of other tools out there. Like I just thought it was Find My Phone. I thought texting in, hey, where are you going? What's happening? Was enough. And for me, it was enough. Was I worried when they took the car out? Yes. Did we have rules that I enforced? Yes. Like, Please text me when you're leaving a place. You have a really hard and fast curfew. Here you go. They didn't have any health needs. They had actually never given me any reason not to trust them. So I decided to trust them. But that would make a big difference, too. If you've had issues in the past with drugs or alcohol or other reasons you need to, you know, you're concerned about your children, I totally get that. So what I liked when we surveyed the Satellite Sisterhood, and what's your feeling? Do you think you would literally track now, Julie, if you had, if you...
No, I think it would have to be just as many people in the article and on the, in the Satellite Sisterhood said, it would depend on the circumstances. I mean, and I talked about this with my husband, who I thought for sure would want to track teenagers. And he said, no, not at all. Because he, you know, he really believes that, you know, you should trust them. You should build it. You should build your relationship on, you know, the human factors of trust and caring and not on technology. And then he also worries about Big Brother. He said, if you're tracking your child, so is some other entity has the ability to track your child. So he worried about that. And
of course he would. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course he worried about things like that.
Yeah.
Because he has a sort of the shady background.
Yes.
Or at least members of our family thinks that he has a that he's a spy because he's worked in some strange places. Okay, but that's what he worried that, like, if you're tracking your child, so is somebody else. And do you want to give that information to someone else?
I think ideally,
yes, you want your relationship with your teenager based on trust and communication, and that's all true. But sometimes that all breaks down. Your teenager is not talking to you. They are like out and out lying to you, you know, and you have reason not to trust them and you have reason to worry about them. And, you know, it is your job and your responsibility to care for them and to help them make good decisions. So, I think I totally empathize with parents, you know, who maybe have had kids who have given them cause, you know, that have really tested the limit, really tried to find out the boundaries. But, ultimately technology, maybe it will keep them a little safer. But, you know, you have to have that human relationship. You have to keep working on that.
Right. And a phone doesn't solve that. I did have to ask myself the question, too, would I have tracked girls?
Yes.
Because you and I both have boys.
Yeah.
So I feel like I would have tracked girls in the sense, like, a lot of our listeners use an app called Life 360, seems very popular for connecting it, or just Find My Phone. So they're not actively looking at what their kids are doing every day. Although the Life 360 people seem to be, you get text or whatever, you get notified like so-and-so's left campus, which, whoa, that was a lot. But I can see Find My Phone, like if you had a daughter. I think I would absolutely just say let's do Find My Phone. If something goes wonky, I just want to know where you are.
Right. Or, you know, Sue on our Facebook group wrote that, you know, she had a brand new driver. She felt, and let's face it, teenagers, they're behind the wheel. As I've said this for many years,
right,
Leanne, but they don't know how to drive.
No.
And so this provides an extra layer of security and safety. So I can totally understand that. Or Cindy and Aaron, who said that this is an important way if your family is all over the place, you know, and God forbid, here we are, we're living in a post 9/11 time, that if you needed to be able to communicate with your family over because of an emergency, you know,
right,
a weather event, an earthquake, or God forbid, another terrorist attack, that having this connection would be very helpful.
Now, I liked some straightforward answers. Gail, she said, it's my phone. I'd like to know where it's at. If they don't want me to track them.
That's solid, Gail. I think that's a solid rationale.
Yeah.
And that's one that both parent and teen can understand, right?
If they don't want me to track them, then get their own phone. All right, Gail. And then who was the one? Helinda said, if NORAD for young adults had been available when my 20-something daughter went to Israel, I would have jumped on it. They stayed connected with WhatsApp and Facebook. But we had other people that say no. Christine said, if there's trust, there's no reason to track. Beth said she doesn't track her daughters 18 and 20. Sometimes she doesn't really want to know where they are. So good point.
So I know that ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
You know, and that, and, you know, that has some merit too, Leanne.
It
you
does.
Know, right?
It does. I think why this article appealed to me was I recently had a friend of mine, an acquaintance, say, question like why her 20-year-old college son was out at 3:30 in the morning. And I was like, well, why do you know that? And she's like, well, I have five my phone and I look where he is every single night. I was like, what? Like, he's in college on the other side of the country, an Ivy League school, by the way. So, you know, you would think maybe he'd somewhere along the way develop some judgment. I was like, don't look at that. Don't, he's in college. Don't look at it. Just, it's one thing to have
really
it. It's another thing to not look at.
Less is more in that situation.
Yeah.
You really don't need to know.
But, right. Okay. But, and then Barb was adamant. No, no, and no. Trust is one of the most important things you can give your kids. When they leave home, they will always remember that you trust them to make good choices and appreciate that you gave them the freedom to make mistakes without constant monitoring. Independence is a process that wouldn't be successful with constant monitoring. So I can totally see. And then we had some maybes. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mirtha said, you know, extenuating circumstances, I get it. And when I text them, I want to reply fairly quickly. So, okay. So
she's tracking via text.
Right.
Okay. Maybe she's not using another app.
Yeah.
But I think all parents want to have a reasonable amount of communication to know where their teenagers are, where they're going, who they're hanging out with. I totally understand the parents who said, my kids had medical things.
You know,
one was a diabetic. Another woman wrote and said her daughters had mental health issues. And she really felt like this was, another layer of safety for her family.
Yeah. Yeah. And then finally, Lori, and I like this idea, and I think this is a great idea. She said her daughter is a senior in college, and she's been roommates with two other young ladies since freshman year. And they agreed to track each other for purposes, from safety on a date to where are you and why aren't you home for dinner. Both parents had nothing to do with this decision. So that's a good idea, having college friends track each other, again, particularly women.
Okay.
So I can see that. Like, I think that would be a good idea. All right. So thank you for answering that question. There's no definitive answer. I guess families work it out in whatever way they want to. But I learned that there are so many more tracking devices out there. I'm an idiot.
All right,
just keep
in mind. Keep in mind that if you're tracking them, somebody else has that information too.
Also keep in mind, you know what? They can just leave the phone somewhere.
Yes, of course they
yes.
can, Leanne. I mean, I do think that whatever tracking app you come up with, they're smarter than we are, and they're going to figure out a way to block, circumvent. You know, if they really, if they're motivated to be somewhere you don't want them to be, they'll work around it.
Well, I'm never doing anything again, because last night I got completely busted for looking at my son's girlfriend's Instagram stories.
Oh, Leanne.
I didn't know that she knew I was looking at them.
Leanne.
He's like, so you've been seeing any good Instagram stories lately? I was like, oh my gosh, how does she know? I don't follow her. I guess it pops up. So
Leanne, okay. Busted. All right.
As I explained to him, I go, I was really just looking for pictures of you, not pictures of her.
Okay. Sure, Leanne. Sure.
It's true. It's all totally true. All right, Jill, we have to move on now to Les Moonves.
CEO of CBS.
Yeah.
Who after now 12 women have come forward to make allegations of sexual harassment, sexual assault, and also really going after these women if they declined his sexual advances. I mean, that 6 months ago, six women had come forward. This is another story from The New Yorker. Rowan Farrow is the writer who has been behind this. And this, he outlines allegations of sexual misconduct while he was at CBS between 1985 and 2000. So he has resigned. As of now, it's not clear what the size of his exit package is. You know, at one estimate, he's already earned $1 billion working for CBS. But that will be determined after a number of outside law firms complete their work regarding the investigations into the allegations of this misconduct. CBS has already announced that they're going to donate $20 million to Me Too groups. But clearly, Les Moonves is the most prominent, most powerful television executive to be forced to step down because of sexual harassment and sexual abuse allegations. And what, you know, Liam, when I saw this, what I didn't understand is he's at CBS. Now, CBS was the same station, same network where Charlie Rose was, you know, the great, you know, who has already stepped down because of sexual allegations and abuse. And I'm wondering what was going on in Les Moonves's head as he's firing Charlie Rose for, you know, for his sexual allegations. Did he think that they were going to find out about him? Did they think, you know, did he think he was a bug, you know, that, oh, well, this happened to Charlie Rose, but it could never happen to me? What do you think was going on?
I think he must have. I think part of this whole thing is just tremendous ego. And to me, this is what separates these big media executives and other people. You know, we've seen CEOs go down is they think they're going to get away with it. And two, they think they deserve, you know, whatever it is that they're asking of the women. And three, they're really retaliatory. I mean, this is not just I said the wrong thing in the meeting. So if I hear one more person like make that comment, like, oh, you can't say anything anymore. I mean, if you read The New Yorker, the Ronan Farrow stories, particularly the latest one, it is so specific. These women have very specific memories of really terrible behavior.
Assault. This is assault in the workplace, in his office. He just attacked these women.
And a pattern, like the one after the other, it's the same thing. Would you like some wine? Here, I'm going to take my pants off. And I mean, it's just unbelievable. So I just think the ego that drives that behavior also drives the I'm never going to get caught behavior. Like, yeah, Julie, why would he not just quietly retire from CBS?
I know.
Like,
I
mean, oh, boy, I better get out before things get rough. You know, unless in his mind he's completely turned, you know, he's saying these were all consensual. And these women remember details that you like, oh, his breath smelled like coffee. It was terrible. Like from 25 years ago, it's a sign to me that this stuff really stayed with them. Like it wasn't this consensual woohoo thing. No, it wasn't. So I think the ego that drives the behavior also drives the denial is all I can guess, you know, because this seems like a no brainer. Take your $1 billion. Retire is the most important. You know, I think he is the most powerful media executive, not just television, you know, and get out. So.
Don't come back either.
Don't come back.
Okay. That's all I have to say.
I know. I got nothing more.
Despicable. Yeah. I mean, and if you're like Les Moonves, you know, if you've got a whole closet full of stuff, just really come out now. All right. Just save us. Save that. So,
yeah, because it is true that the second.
And I've got to move on to this trend because I'm kind of excited about it. But at the same time, I'm a little skeptical and bitter about it.
Okay.
Leanne, here's my question for you.
Yeah.
Are you on fire? Have you heard of this? Fire?
Some days in the month. Yeah, I'm on fire. What?
What? No, not that.
Okay.
Liz, you know we love talking about Framebridge, don't we?
We do.
because
there are just so many fun things to frame, Leanne, aren't there?
Right. Anything. You can just upload a digital photo from your phone and they can print it and frame it. And that is a gift right there, a gift people would love getting. But Liz, you recently had quite an exciting Framebridge experience.
I talked about how when we were at the Bruce Springsteen concert, I was with our brother Dick, his wife Susan, his two kids, and one of the roadies threw us the set list at the end of the show, which was amazing. To get the actual set list for the actual concert in Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, yeah, any day now, that's going to be in a place of honor in their home. Sure enough, Leon, they have already frame-bridged it and sent it to us with a picture. So I'll be in Bend next week, so I'll get to see it. But it's just excellent use of the Framebridge resources, the Bruce Springsteen set list.
Fantastic. And this is gift giving season. So if you have a graduation coming up, a wedding, a shower, Mother's Day, Father's Day, look around. I'm sure you have something fun you can frame, and Framebridge can do it for you. It's easy and it's affordable to frame just about anything. You get fair and transparent upfront pricing based on the size of your item. There's a great selection of frames. And as we've said in the past, fast service, free shipping, great for gifts. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Liz, not many things in life give you a happiness guarantee, but Framebridge does. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So if this
but
sounds like...
But you're going to be happy, okay? And that's just the Satellite Sisters promise. You're going to be out. You're going to be happy you did it.
See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or see a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything, like a Bruce Springsteen set list. That's framebridge.com. Thanks, Framebridge. Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and chilling there with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, yeah. I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. ButcherBox gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox.
What? Not that kind of fire.
What?
This is fire. Financial independence, retire early.
Okay? Oh.
This is a whole new following, okay? These are millennials, okay?
Yeah.
That want to take control of their own agency, Leanne. That's what they want to do. That's the word that they're using.
Agency.
They want to gain control of their time. They want to reduce the stress in their life, that, you know, and so this is a whole online thing to get on fire. And what these followers of fire tend to be male. They tend to work in the tech industry. They tend to be the kind of people with that have the right brain, left brain balance that would get really excited about calculating the compound interest of an item over mm-hmm. 40 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they are the kinds of people that spend a lot of time online, reading blogs, looking at these websites where you get to hack your finances, Leanne, where you learn to increase your savings, you figure out cheap travel, you know, you save at the grocery store. You know, these are young guys. They're like 35, 40 years old. Some of them have families, and that by extreme savings, that's all I can describe it. I mean, they are doing all their own home repairs. They do all their own car repairs. It doesn't sound like they try to consume as little as possible. And that's part of the ethos too, that they believe they want to reduce the amount of consumption. They think that's better for the environment and the planet. They really want to get into simple living. But in the meantime, they're stockpiling their salaries. They're putting it in, and saving it so that they can retire at 43, wow. Be all done.
So are these people who are already making a ton of money and then they're doing
no,
these
no,
other
no.
things?
Not
these
so,
are
well,
like
okay,
six they profiled, figure salaries?
They profiled a computer scientist guy, computer programmer who was making $110,000.
Okay.
Well, that's a very good salary.
But
very
not a zillion. Good. It's not a zillion dollars.
It is not a right. zillion dollars, but he hacked his finances.
He hacked them. So he
saved everything. He managed to save everything, and in a five-year time frame, he had amassed about $1 million in savings. Now, he has benefited by a very strong stock market.
Right.
He invested in that, but he had up to $1 million in savings, and he decided he could not deal with the stress of the job anymore, and he quit his job. He and his wife and their two children, two girls, they are planning to live on a $40,000 a year, you know, a little nest egg. That's what mm-hmm. they expect to live on every year. Some of these on fire people, Leanne, they also take part-time jobs at Starbucks in particular, because Starbucks provides health insurance exactly for the part-time workers. So they want to just check out early, and they do that through extreme savings by really lowering their consumption and simplifying their living. Now, you're going to be, first of all, you're not an ideal candidate, Leanne, because you're too old. I don't think you know anything about computer programming.
No.
But the other thing is you live in California. You live in a very high-priced area.
Yes. Yeah.
So what a lot of these people have done is they've had to sell their fancy house in California. They moved to a lower cost of living spot. In one case, they profiled a couple that moved to Bend, Oregon. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Great.
But you got to turn in those leased BMWs. You know, you just got to get back to basics. But the return on it is that you get a very different kind of lifestyle where you're in control of your time and of your agency, of how much you work and where you go. And a lot of people find that satisfying.
Well, I can, there's a lot to like about that. We all buy too much stuff, probably.
Yeah.
Although I did enjoy my Rothy's that arrived this week. So
yes, I know.
My new fall color.
You got to take your Harry's razor with you.
Yeah, I mean,
okay,
so.
When you're on fire. I agree with that. They said in this article, they were saving money when they go to Costco. Costco for me is my big budget buster.
Yeah.
And every time I walk into that store, I come out with like a giant cart of, with tubs
yard furniture.
Of,
jalapeno
artichoke dip, right?
Yeah. So, how do you pay for your kids' college?
No.
That, okay,
well, again,
so,
you have investments.
So they're I mean, because that's
hack
just
their education too, Leanne.
Big
just
chunk
hack it.
Of money. That's a big chunk of money. I mean, I guess if you go to a state school and they get jobs and everything, you can work that. But it does have some parameters. Hey, Jewel, I'm not on fire, but I applaud these people.
Okay,
good for them. I mean, what's the point? I speak to my husband about like when he retires, and he looks at me and goes, oh, I'm never retiring. Like he is literally never retiring. So
I think that would be good. Yeah, they did profile one person in this story who went on fire and quit his job. And after 2 years, he couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
And went back to work. Yeah, that was not for him.
Right. So I feel like I'm spending some retirement money now. You know, if he's never going to retire, okay, I will go to Europe by myself. See ya. So.
Okay. You're hacking it, Leanne.
I'm hacking it. I'm doing reverse hacking. Reverse hacking. I'm rehacking. Whew. Oh, it's exciting. Julie, entertaining sisters, but we get to announce the book club pick, our next book club.
Oh, what's
pick.
Our new pick, Leanne?
You know, we've really been working hard. I actually did read a lot of books over the summer. We tried to get a few people. We've been moving stuff in and around, but I think we picked a really wonderful book, and you have time to read it. We're going to talk to the author at the end of October. This book is called If You Love Me by Maureen Cavanaugh. Now, you know, our Satellite Sisters book club, we try to go with memoir, biography, or autobiographies by or about women. Sometimes we speak to famous women. Maureen Cavanaugh is not a famous woman. She is a mom. She is a mom who has told an emotionally fraught tale about her daughter and her battle with opioid addiction.
Oh,
I tell
dear.
You, Julie, this book blew me away. I mean, blew me away. It was chilling to read. It was emotional. It was honest. It is eye-opening. I mean, every day you read about the opioid crisis in the paper. Every day, the numbers are staggering. I know that we have people in the Satellite Sisterhood who have been through this with their own family members. So when this book came through the door, I was like, you know, I'll just sit down with this. It was August. I'll see what this is like. I could not put the book down because it was so emotionally absorbing. So I want to encourage you to pick up If You Love Me by Maureen Cavanaugh. It's on Kindle, the audiobook, hardback or paperback. We'll put all the information at satellitesisters.com. I'll also post at the Facebook group too, so you have it. You have plenty of time to read it. I think it's going to give you a lot of insight into what it's really like to be in a family where opioid addiction has taken hold. So this writer, this mom, became an accidental advocate. Her daughter was, you know, her
Is her daughter still alive, Leanne?
As of now, yes. Yeah. Her daughter has been sober, but in and out of rehabs, all kinds of things. And, you know, again, just a normal high school girl from Massachusetts. And the mom ended up seeing a skit on Saturday Night Live about opioid addiction where it made fun of it. And she just couldn't take it. She wrote a Facebook post. It was the first time she had really gone public. And the post went viral. And because of that, she became sort of the face of a mother of an opioid addict. And so and since then, she's become an advocate herself. So it's a wonderful book, though. If You Love Me by Maureen Cavanaugh. We'll be speaking to Maureen at the end of October. So that's our book club pick.
That's a good one, Leanne. And I'm looking forward to reading that. That's just important reading.
It
for
is.
Everyone.
It's important reading. Yep.
I have some less important reading that I want to recommend, Leanne, but you might be curious about this. It was a book club pick for my personal book club. People were curious, and we decided we were going to read it, and we read the new novel by Bill Clinton and James Patterson called The President Is Missing. As you were aware, he's been out on a book tour. President Clinton wrote a book with
those
James
are
Patterson.
Two people that need more money. So I'm glad. I'm glad you bought their book. Okay. How was it? I can't believe you fell for that.
Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. Mm-hmm. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz. My hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leanne Dolan? Yes, I do. Do I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's. Okay? And I'm using it. PROS isn't just better for you. It's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So, PROS, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, PROS. PROS is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And PROS is spelled P-R-O-S-E, pros.com/sisters. Thanks, PROS. Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. the moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life, aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little OSEA this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OSEAMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
No kidding. I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils, I love it all. That duo they have going, like, you can't miss with the duo of OSEA.
Liz, the Mega Moisture Duo.
Yes.
You can literally see your skin get firmer, and it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria Algae Body Oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria Collagen Body Oil. Youthful, yeah. Liz. Your youthful glow is going to happen. And it's infused with OSEA's signature Undaria seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SADSISTERS. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from OSEA. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SATSISTERS at OSEAMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. OSEA is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OSEAMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, OSEA.
First of all, have you ever read any of James Patterson?
Yeah, I've read a couple, you know, picked him up in the airport.
He writes action stories, you know. It's like a Tom Clancy. If you like Tom Clancy, you probably would like a James Patterson book.
Yeah.
Okay. I am not going to tell you anything about the plot or anything like that, but I am going to tell you two things about this book written by President Bill Clinton and James Patterson. Number one, the fictitious president in the book, President Duncan. Maybe it's not surprising to you. He is the smartest person in the book. Okay. So not surprised about that. Number one. And number two, President Duncan's wife is dead. Okay. She died a year ago of cancer.
So it's so much easier when you just, you know,
kill off the wife.
Yes.
I just laughed out loud when I read. I mean, they were trying to make it all sad and tragic that the first lady was dead. I was like, oh, that's convenient, President Duncan. Okay. That's all I'm telling you about the book. Read it if you want. Read the reviews before you purchase the book. But I'm just providing some book news.
Excellent. Good. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Second, it's more of a recommendation, and I'm in the middle of it. Maybe some of you have watched this as well. This is the TV miniseries called Yellowstone. This is starring Kevin Costner. Okay. And it follows the Dutton family, which controls the largest contiguous ranch in the United States, but now is under attack by land developers. There's a whole Indian reservation subplot as well. Apparently, this was the most watched cable TV series of the summer. It is written and directed by one of my favorite writers and directors, Taylor Sheridan. He wrote Sicario and one of my all-time favorite movies, Hell or High Water. He also did the movie Wind River, which I liked a lot.
Unbelievable. That's a great movie.
Yes, which he's born in Waco, Texas, but he loves to write and do films about the American West. Maybe not always in a positive light, sometimes the dark side of the American West, and sort of re-examine some of the mythology associated with it. But I'm enjoying it, and I think Kevin Costner, this is like, he is made for this role. So he plays the father of this big family, and there's, you know, family saga involved. But it's not action-packed. It's sort of more slow-moving and building, but I'm enjoying it.
Okay, good recommendation, Julie. Okay. I wanted to add one more TV show to our Entertaining Sisters recommendations, and that is the show Atypical on Netflix.
Okay.
All right, Jill. I like shows that, well, I like shows about families. I'm always interested in shows that sort of portray like marriages in an interesting way and families in an interesting way that kind of go beyond the usual. And Atypical centers around a family whose oldest son is on the autism spectrum.
Okay.
So we have a mother and a father, a sister, and then the brother with autism. But this is not a perfect family. This is not a perfect situation. They don't have tons of money to throw at the problem. They're doing the best they can. They have hits or misses. The cast is really great. Jennifer Jason Leigh, who, you know, I'm glad to see her back. I'm glad to see her back on the screen. Michael Rapaport plays the dad and like perfect casting. The young actor that plays the brother on the spectrum is fantastic. All the kids are really great in it. So if you liked Switched at Birth, which was about a family dealing with a deaf child and it sort of opened up your world to the deaf community, this is an interesting look at the autism world. I know
I haven't heard about that.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. So you have to have Netflix, and they just released season two this week. But I watched season one and now I'm fully engaged in season two. I think they're doing some interesting stuff with it. So I wanted to mention that. And then I want to mention a podcast, a specific episode of a podcast that I just discovered. Alan Alda has a podcast called Clear and Vivid. And he talks about talking. His interest for the last 20 years has been communicating and how to communicate more effectively. He's done it specifically with science for many years through his foundation, but he's just interested in people connecting and listening. So that sounds like a good Satellite Sister recommendation, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And this
is Alan Alda.
Alan Alda, so it's wonderful. The podcast is called Clear and Vivid, but this week he speaks with Cheryl Strayed, and it's very uplifting. It's nice people, decent people, connecting and talking. I just found the episode so uplifting after such a week of upheaval in many ways. So I just wanted to recommend that. If you just like a Satellite Sister Chaser podcast, you know, go look up Alan Alda, Clear and Vivid, but particularly the episode with Cheryl Strayed. I think she talks about giving advice and what that's like to sort of dig deep into your own personal background to advise somebody else, and what she learned from doing her advice column, Dear Sugar. And then she just stopped her advice podcast, Dear Sugars. But what she thought it was going to be, and which was like, you know, snappy, smarmy advice. And then she realized, oh, people are writing me about really serious things, and I have to kind of dig deep. And this isn't really what I thought it was going to be at all. But it's just a wonderful, beautiful conversation. So I wanted to recommend that. All right. We want to just let people know in the Hurricane Florence zone that we thinking of them. Boy, this storm just came out of nowhere. And so we have a little we have a post on the Facebook group where you can check in. We've also asked people who've lived through Harvey and Katrina to pass on some information. So I was happy to see this morning people were, you know, exchanging ideas.
Some excellent suggestions.
Right.
Definitely heed the warnings. Definitely evacuate if you're asked to evacuate. And, you know, we're thinking of all of our Satellite Sisters and their extended families that might be in the path of the storm.
Yes, absolutely. So if you want to check in, you can go to our Facebook group. If you're not a member, we would love to have you. You can just ask to join and then answer a couple of questions. The group is specifically for people who listen to the podcast. We like to keep that kind of constraint on who's in the group. So if you listen to the podcast, if you're listening now, we would love to have you in the group. All right, Jewel, our to-do list.
Okay, I got one. Leon, I am planning a girlfriend trip to Big Bend National Park in Texas. And it's a big place, Leon. And if any of our Satellite Sisters have any suggestions, tips, where to go, where to stay, where to eat, I'd love to hear them.
You know, I have to be honest, I don't really see your group of friends as like a Big Bend National Park. I mean, have you ever gone to a national park with your college friends?
No. Leon. But it's a big world out there. We're doing it.
Okay.
We're going to go to Marfa, too. Okay?
Oh, all right.
We're going to Marfa.
That
and
seems
then you
got to
go to Big
sense.
Bend. Okay.
I didn't know they were close.
Yeah.
All right.
They're not really close at all. That's one of the things that you realize when you live in Texas. So.
All right. Excellent. All right. Well, here's my to-do list. In 3 weeks, Julie, you're coming out.
Right.
We're having a birthday party for our sister, Sheila. It's an all hands on deck situation. You, Liz, and I thought we would use the opportunity to take some new photos because we literally haven't taken photos in 17 years of us together. Not for any reason, just it's hard to like organize a photo shoot. So we have a photo shoot happening. Here's the thing. I got a haircut Friday. It's a little short. I got to grow my hair out in 3 weeks. So it wouldn't be a big deal, but those publicity photos, like they last forever and they're up forever. I'm like, oh, darn it. My hair is a little short. So you need
some hair stimulation products,
whatever,
or something?
I'm taking those Ritual vitamins. I don't want to overtake the vitamins, but I'm taking them. I'm stimulating my scalp. I need a little more length for the photos in 3 weeks. That's all I'm saying. All right. We would like to thank our sponsors for today's show. Thanks to Harry's and Care.com, Beachbody On Demand, and Framebridge. For more information on our sponsors, the offers and the links, you can go to SatelliteSisters.com. We would like to thank Sergio Enriquez, who's our engineer. Happy that he's here today. So next week, Liz will be back. Are you here next week,
Jim? I'm here. Yeah, I'll be here. Yeah.
You know, just to know, we have some special guests that we haven't even mentioned coming up in October and November. We're trying to get some special people on the show. We've secured some special people, and we will let you know when we can, right? We got some production plans here.
Yeah, we do. We got big plans for the fall. So stay with us, people, okay?
Yeah. Stay with us. All right, we're the Satellite Sisters. Jewel, have a great week.
You too, Liam.
And don't forget, call your satellite sister.